Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000. Welcome once again to the quest for 10,000. I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
Thank you so much for downloading and listening to this week's episode. Today, we talk in our big topic about the rapid rise and
faster fall
and short time span that movie stars seem to have to be in our consciousness. We'll talk about in our top five actors who seem to be on the rise to superstardom and the actors and actresses who seem to already be off the stage or well along falling off the cliff. But before we get to that topic, let's talk again with Brian about where he is in his quest for 10,000. So, Brian, where are you now in the quest?
6,937.
And what is the last movie you saw?
Well, about halfway through, I paused the movie when I came over this way. French film, 2010, Little White Lies. It stars Marion Cotillard and Jean Dujardin.
Okay, so you're halfway through it. Can you tell if the movie yet
The first half has been good. If it maintains where it's at, you know, it has potential to be a 3.5-star. Which that, for me, the vast majority of films are 3 stars. I feel that I don't love them, I don't hate them, they're just there.
3 stars is the Mendoza line
three stars, but 3.5 means I liked it. 4, I very rarely give a film 5 stars. Very, very rare. Reserve that for the best of the best. But 3.5 is a good...
So what is the plot so far?
A group of friends and the movie starts with one of them. He has a car accident right before the group is supposed to, or he's on a motorcycle, but before they're supposed to go on a vacation trip together. The rest of the friends, they convene at the hospital where they see him, and they all decide to go without him. Because they figure, well, we've already spent the money, we're going, you know. It's just these interlocking relationships and how they sort of fib to each other and how that plays off. And so far it's been good. Not great, but good.
All right. So, with films like this, I'm guessing you read subtitles,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, usually, like this film I watch through this streaming service I use called Mubi, where they every day they put a new film up, and after 30 days they take it down. So you've got a constantly rotating selection, and so that's what came out today on their service. They will have subtitles for you. Occasionally, like if it's a movie that's on a list that I want to see, I can find a copy of it online in the internet, but it doesn't have subtitles. So then there are a couple of opensubtitles.org that will provide you with subtitles. Sometimes it's hard to match them up, but you know I have to do that or I would not know what's going on.
And the 2 stars of this film again?
Marion Cotillard, who won an Oscar in 2007 for La Vie en Rose, playing Edith Piaf. And Jean Dujardin, who won in 2011, which is the year after this movie, for The Artist.
Would you say these are 2 actors that are kind of at the height of their powers and popularity?
Marion Cotillard she is rising, but she's pretty high. I mean, she is a pretty formidable actress. She, you know, she was in The Dark Knight Rises. She was Ra's al Ghul's wife. I mean, Ra's al Ghul's daughter. And, you know, like I said, she played La Vie en Rose. She was in a movie called Rust and Bone that was really well thought of, and she was excellent in it. So she is, he's where he's going to be. I mean, he's going to have a comfortable career. He's going to be the French Kevin Kline. There's nothing wrong with that. Everybody loves Kevin Kline.
Is it wrong that I first thought when you said the French Kevin Kline, I thought, well, isn't Kevin Kline the French Kevin Kline also?
I mean, you know, nothing at all wrong with that career, but not a legendary career.
Well, and of course, the reason I ask this is because it's really an introduction into our big topic for this episode of The Quest for 10,000, and that is basically kind of looking at the short lifespan of an actor, actress's kind of time in the proverbial spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
I think this thought came to me, Brian, in thinking about how many films you've seen, how many different eras of a film that you've watched and experienced, and thinking about how many different rise and fall you've seen.
You can chart.
And the other maybe fuel for this particular episode also is that before we started this quest for 10,000, we had a short-lived experiment, another podcast, where we talked and argued about what level a certain actor was on. Were they an A-lister, a B-lister, a C-lister? We offered our arguments on that sort of debate. So I just think this would be an interesting topic for us to discuss and for our listeners to join in the conversation, either via Twitter at 10kmovies or on your blog, 10kmovies.com. But I guess I'll start with this question. Is what would you say is kind of the average time for most actors to sort of be in the spotlight, kind of at the top of the list, if you will?
With exceptions, and there are exceptions, I'd say for male, for actors, it's going to be somewhere between 7 to 9 years. For women, I don't think they get seven. I think 5 to 7 is by the end of that. And some of that is patently unfair, but I think they are forced with enormous pressure as far as making a family, as far as their career decisions, as far as, you know, the misogyny of Hollywood, where you have 50-year-old men dating 20-year-old women in movies left and right, no one bats an eye. And so that severely limits the number of roles. Once you've hit 30, like, I know there's a story going around where Maggie Gyllenhaal was told she was too old to date a 55-year-old guy, and she's not 40 years old. You know, you're too old for the part. That's incredibly sexist. But having said that, you know, I'm not on a socialist crusade. That's not my job. I'm just pointing it out and saying that it limits their time to really be on top of their game.
What do you think contributes to that, besides obviously what you said, the misogyny, in the case of actresses, but overall, what are some other factors you think contribute?
A, they get bad advice from agents. They make poor decisions as far as as you are aging, it becomes ridiculous if you are still in the same type of roles that you were doing when you were 25, 26. And you see what happens with comedic actors is if they're a big physical comedy or a comedy that they can't really do as well when they get, they almost always tend to try to get into some kind of dramatic work. That's because they can no longer do the thing that they could do. And the key is to do it at the right time, and it's hard to have that other skill set like in your back pocket. And so you get pigeonholed, and it's very difficult to break out of that and to transition into older roles. Where Michael Caine said it great recently. He said, look, now I'm being offered people's grandfathers, and I realize I am somebody's grandfather. He goes, so there's nothing, you know, you have to have a certain level of humility and be willing to let go of that vanity, otherwise you're not going to be getting any roles.
And Michael Caine is a great example of that. He's probably an actor, you would say.
He has really
even though
extended
in the
70s,
he was kind of the superstar, very much in demand. I'd say he still seems to be in demand, but he's someone who's sort of embraced who he is, his lane. He hadn't done a lot of stupid kind of movies.
Well,
he's sort of kept
on the flip side of that,
a woman
that has done something similar. Maggie Smith has done something similar.
Right.
Where she has been willing to accept the reality of where she is and take roles that will fit with the, you know, with that people will believe her in.
So a major factor, and it's really an obvious one,
is age.
It's just simply age.
It
the
is.
Way it's going and the
And
the,
you think about how many movies do you know to where romantic movies where the two leads or one of the leads is clearly someone who is in their 60s or 70s. There aren't many of those a year. Okay? So you got to understand that those type of roles are not going to come around for that many people, male or female, who are in that time of their life. There are some, but you're all, you know...
And it's kind of partly this, too, I think why it's just an interesting topic, is it's kind of the other side of movie making, in some sense. You know, movies are at their best, I think, at their purest, at their innocence. They're supposed to show us some slice of life, some kind of truth. They're supposed to entertain us. But also, we don't always want to see the realest of the real. You know, we want to see a more glamorized sort of thing, because that, maybe it's because it's more entertaining, maybe because of any number of reasons, it's more profitable, what have you, but it's sort of this sort of disposable, in some ways, nature of actors, actresses, they're good for so long until they're not good anymore, is something you have to contend and wrestle with.
Hitchcock was the one who called
you're a movie lover
cattle, and that's what he now, he wasn't, he was kind of half joking, but he said, you know, he referred to all actresses as cattle.
Let's go back. Thinking about Hitchcock just makes me think of years past. So in this quest, you've seen movies all the way from the advent, really, of filmmaking. Yeah. So who would you say was, like, kind of the first superstar of filmmaking that you can kind of think of?
As far as actors, actresses?
As far as actors, actresses. And how long did that kind of last for them until kind of the next big thing?
Well, now, the first superstars were the silent era superstars, and the thing that killed almost all of their careers was sound. Like, it was, I mean, you know.
Again, a very obvious.
Yeah, I mean, there cannot be enough said. I know Singing in the Rain sort of touched on it, and other movies have sort of dealt with it somewhat, but there cannot be enough said for the people that went from being, you know, the toast of the town, money pouring in, to unemployed, basically within a year or two period, just because they couldn't adapt. But and not just that, you know, not just that their voices were not good enough. Some of them have fine voices, but the style of acting, like, all of a sudden the camera's way back here, you don't have to show their faces, and all of a sudden they could not make the adjustment. And so several of those had real problems. You know, you got Francis Bushman, Ramon Navarro, you know, some of those guys were real big, huge names, and just really struggled. Some of them you can watch now, and like some of the first superstars, like Norma Shearer, she was a huge star, married to Irving Thalberg, and after he died, she sort of faded away. But you can see why, too. The trend was away from her style of acting. You know, you get, I would say in any generation, you probably get anywhere from 4 to 5 talents that are able to transcend the limitations of that, you know, like a Chaplin, like Cary Grant, like Jimmy Stewart, who was acting for, you know, forever, Katharine Hepburn, in today's equivalent, Meryl Streep. You can make a case for Tom Hanks. You know, people that they're able to stretch it out, but the vast majority, you just don't have, you're not given that opportunity, or your talent is not, I guess, not good enough to get that opportunity.
Well, who do you think then, as you've gone through all the movies, the almost 7,000 movies you've seen now, who do you think are some of the kind of forgotten A-listers who bear people going back and viewing and appreciating?
Okay. Well, I know somebody that it blows my mind how big of a star she was and how little we ever talk about her. Doris Day. We never discuss Doris Day. Like, we never talk. She just, like, almost, you know the name, but sometimes you almost, like, you sort of have to think, oh yeah, she's a Rock Hudson, and that's all you know. Like, the two of them, you've probably not seen the movies, but you know the two of their names together. She was, for 4 or 5 years, she was like the number one star, box office star. Huge run of hits, and now, she, I mean, you know, most people don't even realize she's still alive. She's still living, and nobody even thinks about it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought,
she worked,
you said it.
Yeah, she's in her 90s, but she now donates or does a lot of her time with humane societies and animal rights groups. But, you know, she's one name, the name that comes immediately to mind. And it's sad because you can see some other names starting to fade from her. Like Burt Lancaster, you can see him starting to lose some of his luster. Like, less and less people will really know who he was than recognize the name. But again, you don't know who he is. I'm trying to think of who else from the same era, from the 60s, even the 50s. You know, some names are going to stay with us. Like, we're going to know, I think, we're going to know who Cary Grant is. And
Robert Redford.
Robert Redford's going to stay there, yeah. Yeah, those names, I think, have been elevated. But that may change, too, you know. Time has a way of destroying all those things.
Right. Well, you've also probably seen actors and actresses who were big stars, or at least ascending towards being a big star, and some bump in the road came a long way, either a bad film or a bad choice off the set, some sort of a addiction or just poor personal choice that sort of made them, we don't want to mess with this person in the movies, and sort of cratered, but then kind of came back up. Call it the Robert Downey Jr. effect, right? So who are some examples of that?
Jane Fonda did something like that. You know, I think after she went over to Vietnam and her protest, she became very difficult to bank. Now, she was still in, because she had connections and people still liked her, but her film suffered, and her opinion, I think, overall opinion of her kind of plateaued. I think people have started to, like, kind of have a fondness for her again now, but I think she certainly hurt her career with some off-the-field decisions. Other people that are in, you know, they make a horrible decision, and they go into a movie, and they sort of just fade out. Well, like, look at Richard Dreyfuss, okay? In the 70s, at the end of the 70s, he was a hot name. He was in Close Encounters, he was in Jaws, he was in American Graffiti. What happened? Like, after that period of time, he was in Stakeout, another Stakeout. Like, not
and
movies.
And Mr. Holland's Opus.
But that's what I'm saying. Mr. Holland's Opus was it. That was the one, like...
Yeah, now he's more of a supporting actor.
Yeah, but he had a really substantive career, had a chance to be kind of like the yin to Jack Nicholson's yang in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have been,
or sort of even a Tom Hanks-ish.
But everybody falls. Everybody falls. Because even you think Robert De Niro. Okay, he's made a little bit of a comeback, but he's made a comeback because he's willing to take different roles. He's willing to spoof his thing, but he's also willing to just be a quality supporting guy in the movies from David O. Russell, like Silver Linings Playbook. Mm-hmm. Or the other one, the one where he was a mobster in it. But he's willing to do that now. But there was a period of time when he was in some bad movies.
Well, Al Pacino is another great example of that.
Al Pacino's
of
in
someone who is a superstar.
Superstar. Like, just, you cannot think of 70s cinema or 70s films without having to deal with Jack Nicholson at some point. Okay. Because the breadth of what he did and the importance of the films he was in.
You mean Al Pacino?
Yeah. What did I say?
You said Jack Nicholson.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You could also, I mean, the
but Al Pacino,
point holds true
you cannot,
for Jack Nicholson.
You cannot deal with the 70s without talking about it. But Jack managed to push his on into the 80s and into the 90s. He didn't have near the wilderness that Al Pacino did.
Yeah. So say though a little bit more about just, you mentioned this before we recorded, about why you think it is one or two bad movies really can submarine,
well, you know, we,
a person's career.
I think sometimes we get a false impression of how many films are the length of somebody's career. Because, A, we may see one movie so many times, we think, oh, I've been watching this guy forever. And in our minds, it feels that way. But if you look at the list of the movies they're in, most people probably wind up with 30, maybe 40. Now, you'll have the occasional Sam Jackson who's in, like, any and everything he can be in or something like that. But most people, they only get about 30 to maybe 50 on the tail end. And that's a long career. And it makes sense because you think, you know, it takes, you know, months to make a film.
Right.
So you're only going to get two or three a year. You know, that makes sense when you think about it. But when you and I think, that seems like an awfully small number. And when you only have 30 films, two or three bad movies, that's 10% of your output is crap, you know? So all of a sudden, it's a lot harder to then, rise up and overcome that.
Right.
But at a certain point, no matter who you are, you've got to provide food for your family, and you've got to pay your bills. And so artistic integrity will only get you so far until you're like, well, I got to make some money. You know, that's how Al Pacino winds up in Adam Sandler movies. You know, Jack and Jill. So.
Well, let's end the conversation there, because that's a great example again of someone who really is—he's
a laughingstock.
I wouldn't say he's declining anymore. His decline has possibly plateaued. But let's talk a little bit about our specifics of who is maybe ascending to the top, who may still be not quite in the prime of their career, but maybe really close. And then who are some folks who we feel have really just kind of, if they haven't completely fallen off, they are just well teetering on the edge of that cliff. Okay. So which one do you want to start with? The ascending?
Let's go with
the
ascending first. Let's be positive first.
Ascending. So number five on our ascending stars. This is Brian. Brian and I worked again on this top five a little bit together. So these are just our opinions. I can already think of many that we didn't mention as our top five. But these are our opinions. Make sure you check in with us on Twitter or at Brian's blog if you have other ideas. But what you said one name for number five, okay, which was
Tom Hall Gleason.
And then I said, well, then you also got to add in Oscar Isaac.
Yeah,
to
and
me,
my,
they're like the bird and magic.
Sure,
currently.
My Tom Hall list was just because this is 2016. And so we're coming off one, he is coming off one of the most just ubiquitous years. And now some of that may have been, those films may have just happened to fall. But, you know, he was in Brooklyn, he was in Ex Machina, he was in Star Wars. And then he was in something else, and The Revenant. And then not long before then, he was in that Richard Curtis film, Love About Time, which is a really cute little movie. So he's really, that's four or five. All of those are at worst middle of the road, but not a bad one. Most of them above average.
And I tend to think too, what he's got going for him, you know, the Scottish Irish.
He does have that.
His Irish heritage. To me, that also is kind of a built-in advantage of prolonging his career in some way.
Yeah.
Because there's sort of a niche there that he's going to have. That's going to be maybe harder for some of his peers to have. And I put Oscar Isaacs with him mainly because of the Star Wars media tour. They seem to always be together.
Yeah, and
he was also in Ex Machina.
He's on anybody's list of up-and-comers, Oscar
they just
is
say
gonna
he's
be,
got it.
Yeah,
he's
going to be
sort of
on the list.
He has it. And you can tell in Star Wars Force Awakens, Poe was a character that really was supposed to die.
Yeah.
And they kind of brought back
and
on
the force
of his personality and his acting chops and their thoughts of, like, we really like to have this guy for more than one film. So that's number five. Number four is an actress that some might even say really is. She's probably just knocking on the door of kind of superstardom, but still has, you know, just a little bit more work to do, and that was Anna Kendrick.
Oh, yeah, I love Anna. I love Anna Kendrick. She is one of my, you know, Pitch Perfect 2. She can sing, she can dance, she's just got this incredibly infectious personality. I think she's already a superstar, but I understand what you're saying, that she may need
a
breakthrough role.
She needs another up in the air, maybe.
Another up in the air.
To kind of
Pitch
push
Perfect
her.
Was a huge, Pitch Perfect 2, huge hit.
Huge hits, but in terms
and
of kind
her.
Of the, in
I
terms
mean,
of the dramatic kind of weight,
sure,
she
can,
might
I
need
that.
That.
And
I'll even give.
And she's in this movie musical called The Last 5 Years. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Oh my gosh, it's fantastic.
Now, number three is someone who's had a slow, steady build kind of to the, I think, to the top tier.
Nearing 50.
Nearing 50. And he, I think, stole the show in Captain America Civil War.
Well, co-stole the show.
Co-stole the show with a couple of other actors. But who was that?
Mr. Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd.
Now, yeah, Paul Rudd is an interesting career. I mean, his career, if you look at it, it's been a long, pretty lengthy career. I think he was in Clueless, right? Wasn't he
yes.
in Clueless? So then, you know, we're talking 20 years. But in the last two or three years, he's really hit his own and found a voice distinct from being like the goofy guy who's in the room. Because, I mean, Anchorman, he was good in, but he was still part of the supporting characters for Will Ferrell. I mean, it's Will Ferrell's movie. So, you know, his role is not to be that guy. But now if you watch what he did on Parks and Rec, and he took that character and sort of just tweaked it. A lot of people were really excited when he got the Ant-Man gig, because they thought this was a chance for Paul Rudd to really elevate. And Ant-Man was okay, but his performance in Civil War was really, really spot on perfect.
And the reason we mention him is because he's really the exception to that rule we talked about earlier, which is, you know, he's hitting 50, which is a time where you actually maybe see less roles, but he feels to me like an actor who might have more roles.
It's not a firm rule. I mean, whenever you come up, you have that. That's the kind of period of time you have. Now, for men, you probably have longer to get there. Because you think of how old George Clooney was before he hit became George Clooney.
Right.
I mean, he was mid-30s to 40. You know, he had toiled for a decade or so in relative obscurity before he became Nipple Batman.
So Paul Rudd may be a parallel to George Clooney. Uh-huh. I can buy some of that, at least in career trajectory.
Now, the next two are the people that we really they're superstar and, status.
And I'd say number two, most people would already say he's a superstar. But I just feel like there's another level he can go to.
There may be.
And that's Chris Pratt. And the what I think is left for him to do is he had some great roles in dramatic movies. Moneyball, Zero Dark Thirty, but he was a supporting character.
Yeah.
He hasn't yet carried a really dramatic...
Where he's front and center.
Kind of Oscar kind of...
Yeah. Where he's not relying on, like, you know, quips and charm. Where he's really...
Or even if he is, he's sort of the center of the story.
Yeah, but you would think that the movie's not going to be structured where he's just delivering one-liners.
Right. I mean, that's what you're saying. I think there's still a level he can reach if he can show a little more range. But number one,
she is really... if you look at the number of films she's in, very small set of films. But what she has done, however, is made a huge impact in that small series, small limited workload. Lupita Nyong'o burst onto the scene with 12 Years a Slave and really was the emotional core of that movie, was her character. Got herself in a pretty substantive role in the new Star Wars film, and by virtue of the way it's done, a role that she could be tied into for 20, 30 years down the line, you know, merchandising-wise, which has cannot hurt her.
Right.
You know, going on down the line. Right. I mean,
all right, we're not going to take as long to talk about the ones we think are on decline.
We miss a lot of people.
Which also makes it. Oh, we miss tons of people.
Because I want to mention some names that didn't make our list. But these are names that I think should be on the decline list: Brad Pitt, Jack Black, Will Ferrell. Those are
three sort of maybe dishonorable mentions. But real quick, our top five that we think are on decline. The first two are ones that really their ascent derailed for one reason or another. Either audiences got tired of them or they just didn't do enough to kind of keep making good choices in films. You said number five.
Yeah, she was. I thought, if you'd asked me 2 years ago, I would have thought she could have been right up there with Jennifer Lawrence. I thought they were following a similar career trajectory. But I was wrong, and it's Shailene Woodley.
She's done anything since.
I mean,
she's in Divergent series.
She was in that movie from based on the John Green novel, Fault in Our Stars. She was good in it.
Yeah,
I don't want to derail that, but I just feel like she has not really taken off like I thought she would. And I'm basing this on The Descendants. I thought she was so good in that movie.
But right now, her star has dimmed.
For me, yeah, certainly.
James Franco was who we decided would be number four. Franco, maybe that's some by design. He seems to be a guy that doesn't really care a whole lot about being.
He's just spending his Spider-Man money.
That's right. He just seems to be popular. But you know, Freaks and Geeks, Spider-Man, the last really critically acclaimed movie I think he did was that 127 Hours.
Yeah.
You know, but he just doesn't. What really hurt him, and this will factor into our next
is the rise
number three.
Of Seth Rogen.
Well, the rise of Seth Rogen is actually a separate issue. Seth seems to be rising while Franco seems to be going
on a teeter totter.
But really, what hurt Franco more than anything
that Oscars performance
was the Oscars.
Oh, yeah,
it killed him, and also killed our number three in some ways.
Well, it didn't kill her quite as bad because she got an Oscar after that.
But most of the rumors too are that she was very difficult to work with.
But that he was stoned the entire time.
After that performance.
And then there were rumors that he got like grades handed to him at Columbia and that kind of stuff. Yeah, he seemed a little entitled.
But our number three, Anne Hathaway, just hasn't done much since that Oscar win.
No, I agree with you. And she does have the stink of the Get Smart movie on her. I mean, that was a bad movie.
Again, I think it's audience fatigue. I think there was a little bit, it was almost like a second wave of backlashes. People felt so bad for her after the Oscars thing, but then it kind of turned. People felt so bad for her that people started to get annoyed.
She was phenomenal. She was good in that. What else? She was in The Devil Wears Prada, right?
Yeah, but that was before Lady.
But I'm saying she has some you know, she was in Dark Knight Rises, which was after Les Mis or right at the same time. So she's got, but she it does appear that she's taking like a hiatus. Although right. Interstellar, yeah, you know, I like Interstellar.
And so again, so maybe that's more of a plateau. But it's just someone who
she's
seemed
not,
to be like
you would think she would have been she elevated, was gonna, and she hasn't.
And,
been
and after Les Mis, she'd be a perennial Oscar contender.
Yeah, you would.
And she just hasn't.
She hasn't been able to take that
make
leap.
A lot of. Yeah, film choices that allow her to do that. All right, and now the top two, again, are two actors who, these are just like kind of the no-brainers.
Okay.
So number two is probably actually it's been building for a while, but recent news has sort of, I think,
accelerated. I would say.
And that's Johnny Depp.
Yeah, it's like Johnny Depp's career over the past 5 years has been watching in slow motion a meteor fall. I mean, because you
can't be Jack Sparrow all the time.
Well, you see, you know, yeah, Lone Ranger, where he plays the Native American version of Jack Sparrow.
Mordecai,
Shadow,
where he plays the James Bond version of Jack Sparrow. So Johnny Depp, a case of gone to the same well one million times too often.
Yeah.
Number one, though, and you've been on this train a lot longer than a lot of people have. And this is this one's painful.
It is
because
painful.
Growing up,
it is painful. I know it is.
It just like the epitome of cool, and just kind of what you wanted to kind of to be around and be a part of, and I just don't have words for how not it is cool it is anymore,
or how fresh it is
for Will Smith. Now, I don't know if Independence Day Resurgence would have gotten better reviews. We talked about this in the last episode.
It couldn't have gotten worse.
But it seems like the type of film that Will Smith has chosen quite often over the last several years.
You know, he has made some very poor career decisions. He's made a conscientious decision, it seemed, to push his children at his own expense. But you know what's weird about that is nobody blames Jada for pushing the children. Everybody blames Will. Nobody blames her for doing the same type thing.
Well, and also, I think the continuous rumors about him and Jada, whether they have an open marriage or not,
really
whether they're going to divorce or not, that seems to have hurt
his
key
rating. Well, the Scientology rumors hurt.
And his kids themselves, who I'm all for young people expressing themselves, having opinions, having thoughts, and that being encouraged, but there also seems to be, I don't know, just a lack of sophistication sometimes in the way they express them, a lack of nuance.
Well, and it
maybe
does
sometimes
it feels like he was trying
them.
To give his children an advantage and let them start, you know, 200 meters in front in the race because of who he was. And that may not be
which
true,
which is understandable.
But people resent that.
Well, yeah, it's understandable. In some ways, it's even admirable, but. But I think you're right. I think it's affected other ways he's
perceived.
Although
I will say, his son, Jaden, the Karate Kid movie, was a decent movie.
Was really, yeah, I agree with that.
But After Earth was a horrible movie.
So, the last good movie that Will Smith was in, that it was critically acclaimed, was probably The Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Is what I would say. But that's been over, you know, 8-9 years.
Yeah, closing on 10 years.
And so, it's just been a
and
while
we'll
since
see,
he's really
but
had
neither one
it.
Of us have and high expectations that Suicide Squad will turn this around.
And Concussion was that NFL
film.
It was
good.
And it was nominated.
It was good.
For an award.
But it was just.
It was almost like, to me, the buzz on that was almost in spite of Will Smith, not necessarily because
it was
of
just,
Will Smith.
I think the buzz on it was more about timely than it was about
right.
the quality of the film.
Right.
It's just like, you know, the performances may or may not be that great, but the film itself appears at the right time.
So, listeners, that's our top five for ascending and top five for descending. Agree, disagree, let us know again. Join the conversation on Twitter at 10kmovies or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, which with two top fives went a little bit longer than normal. Next episode, we'll try to get that link back down to a more manageable 30 minutes. But thank you for sticking with us, and we hope that your next week will be a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11.